Speaks the Nightbird, written by Robert R. McCammon and read by Eduardo Ballerini.
Chapter 1. Came the time when the two travelers knew night would catch them, and shelter must be found. It had been a joyful day for frogs and mudhens. For the human breed, however, the low gray clouds and chill rain coiled chains around the soul. By the calendar, the month of May should by all rites and predictions be charitable, if not merry. But this May had entered like a grim-lipped miser pinching out candles in church. Waterfalls streamed through the thick branches that interlocked 40 feet above the road. The leaves of ancient oaks and elms, and the needles of the lofty pines were more ebon than green, the huge trunks bearded with moss and blotched by brown lumps of fungus the size of a blacksmith's fist. To say that there was a road beneath those branches would be taking liberties with language. It was a canker-colored mudhole emerging from the mist and disappearing into the mist.
"Steady, steady,"
said the wagon's driver to the pair of laboring nags as they pulled southward, breath steaming and skinny flanks trembling against the weight of wooden wheels through slop. He had a small stinger of a whip close at hand, but he declined to use it. The horses, which along with the wagon had been afforded him from the municipal stable of Charlestown, were doing all they could. Beneath the wagon's soaked brown burlap canopy, and behind the raw pinewood plank that occasionally fired splinters into the traveler's rear ends, were two unmatched trunks, a valise, and a wig box, all four pieces of luggage bearing scars and gouges that betrayed lives of undignified shipment. Thunder rumbled overhead. The horses struggled to lift their hooves in the muck.
"Get up there,"
the driver said, with not a smudge of enthusiasm. He gave the reins a half-hearted flick, his hands protected by a pair of gray cloth gloves. Then he sat without further comment as raindrops fell from the furled edges of his black, mud-spattered tricorn hat and added more soggy bulk to his Raven Hughes fear-not coat.
"Shall I take them, sir?"
The driver glanced at his fellow sufferer, who was offering to hold the reins. By no idols of the imagination could the two be called bookends. The driver was 55 years of age, the passenger fresh of 20. The older man was big-boned and had a heavy-jowled and ruddy face, with thick and bristling gray eyebrows set like ramparts over deeply cast ice-blue eyes that were as congenial as newly primed cannon barrels. His nose, as a polite Englishman might say, was well-dimensioned. A forthright Dutchman might say its owner had bloodhound in his lineage. The driver's chin was also a sturdy piece of sculpture, a square bulwark scored with a cleft that could have sheltered a small musket ball. Usually his face was scraped clean by scrupulous passes of the razor, but today the salt-and-pepper beard was making an appearance.
"Yes," he said. "Thank you."
He passed the reins over, one of the many times they'd exchanged this duty in the past hours, and worked some feeling back into his fingers. The younger man's lean, long-jawed face had courted more candle glow than sunlight. He was thin, but not frail, rather sinewy, like a tough garden vine. He wore square-toed shoes, white stockings, olive-green breeches, and a short, tight-fitting brown jacket made of cheap kerseymere over a plain white linen shirt. The knees of his breeches and the elbows of his jacket had been patched at least as often as the older man's clothing. On his head was a dun-colored woolen cap, pulled down over finely textured black hair that had recently been cropped close to the scalp to combat an infestation of lice in Charlestown. Everything about the younger man, nose, chin, cheekbones, elbows, knees, conveyed the impression of sharp angles. His eyes were gray, flecked with dark blue, the colors of smoke at twilight.